Science is changing how some brewers make beer. While beer making has typically been thought of as an art, science plays a big role. Some brewers hope that by incorporating science, beer will be thought of as diverse and as distinct as wine.
Todd Pittock is here to explain how science is changing brewing. He's a writer whose work has appeared in The Atlantic, National Geographic Traveler, and other national publications. You can find his piece, Brewing Better Beer with Genetics, at discovermagazine.com. Todd, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be here.
Well, for people who have never tried making their own beer, I've watched it done. I've never done it myself. Give us the basics. What's the outline of the process to make a beer?
You start with, and I want to preface this. I'm not a beer maker myself. I'm a beer drinker, and and that kind of got my curiosity going. You have some basic ingredients. You got water, hops. A grain, which is usually barley and yeast. You soak the grain, it sprouts, you heat it. There's a drying process that stops it from germinating and isolates enzymes, and they call that malting. Then you have this malt, it's ground up, you put it in hot water, that turns starches into sugars, they call that mashing, and that creates this kind of slurry, this broth called wort, you drain that, bring it to a boil, you add hops and other things, there's all kinds of things being added in the world today. Then as that cools, you add the real magic ingredient, the live yeast, and that begins to eat up the sugars, which releases carbon dioxide and alcohol. So I don't know if that got real technical. Then you get to fermentation, and you have your beginnings of your beer.
That's what I was looking for. And a lot of those things, I think, you think of them as a craft or maybe an art of doing those. But now it seems like more and more science is entering the picture. So how are people trying to get really analytical and take science into their craft beer making?
Well, there's an interesting background here, okay, which is that originally, back in the day when they started to mass produce beer, and the whole alcohol world is actually returning to its roots of craft because people used to make things in their backyard all the time. But the big companies started to bring science. They are the ones who introduced the science and the laboratory into the brewery. And they did that really for economic reasons. They wanted to figure out how to scale up and to make beer cheaper. And then the craft guys came in and they really spurned that. They started to want to experiment and they really chucked science. It was all going to be by feel. It was the art of beer. But that had its limitations. And now various things happened in the second, in the next wave of craft beer that made the craft guys start to look at science in a somewhat different way.
And how did they start doing that? How did they start rethinking the role of science in their beer?
First of all, embracing science and starting to pick out different flavors. And start to ask themselves why they were getting certain things so that batches weren't so random. And then you had this other thing started to come on as the companies got a little bit bigger, which was actually a big move in the whole world of science, which is genome mapping,
mm-hmm.
Right? Just like we started to, map human DNA, and as that science progressed, and it progressed very quickly, it became more affordable to begin to put yeast under the microscope and look at its DNA and patterns and sequencing and then from that infer or work out how you could change things to alter flavor profiles.
And the idea is that yeast, different kinds of yeast, different strains, I guess, have different flavor profiles. So we're actually getting to the point where we can look at the DNA of the yeast and start figuring out a link between the genes and the final outcome?
Exactly. And so there are companies, for example, so somebody makes a beer, and it's something about it happens in it, and it produces what people in the business call off flavors, meaning that their flavors are off the mark of what they had intended to create. Sometimes that means a mistake and the batch is ruined, but sometimes you taste it and you say, hey, that wasn't what I was aiming for, but that was pretty good. And so they can then go back and say, well, what happened under a microscope and replicate it, whereas before you couldn't really do that. The net result of it all is that the world of beer is really expanding, and over time we're going to see, you know, greater flavor profiles. You know, if you take the world of wine or other alcohols, you probably had a broader continuum of flavors, you know, greater variety, and beer may get there.
That's amazing to me, because you go to a store, a well-stocked beer store, and there are so many different types of beer, flavors. People are talking about beer, as you mentioned, as they talk like wine. With this new genetic research into the yeast and other elements of science, we're going to see maybe even a bigger explosion of varieties of beer?
You know, that's what a lot of people say. And so one of the things you're seeing, if you go into a lot of bars today, the big trend is in Brett beers. Brett is short for Brettanomyces, and if that sounds a little overwhelming, you'll also hear people refer to them as sours, wild yeast beers. And so Brett's are a great example, and that's why actually in my story in Discover, I kind of lead with a story about a very pioneering young brewer named Chad Jacobson at Crooked Stave in Denver. Brettanomyces is this wild yeast compared with Saccharomyces, which is domesticated yeast. Historically, you mention Brettanomyces to, say, a winemaker, and they start to sweat. It's something that you can't control.
You want to keep the stuff out, usually.
Definitely want to keep it out of your barrels. It's going to ruin everything. And so guys like Chad and other brewers are using, you know, very... putting all this under the microscope to understand what happens in the wild yeast to manipulate and find new flavors, because this is a whole world of beer that was largely avoided before. So you're seeing this. This is already proliferating, kind of like the wild yeast. It's proliferating across the world of beer, and you're getting a whole flavor range. And Chad, for example, objects to the term sours because they're now, as they start to control the flavors, they're not all sour. They're not all that mouth-puckering thing. I don't know if you've tried any of them.
I haven't, no. But they're not all sour.
No, they might be lightly tart. You might get fruitiness. You get actually, they're probably closest on the spectrum of flavor, many of them, to wine. You get what's called vinous or wine qualities to them.
We're talking to Todd Pittock about the science of beer, a lot of new research going on that could lead to a lot of new kinds of beer. And, Todd, the science is also bringing back old, ancient beers. Can you talk about what's going on there with people trying to recreate beers from 3,000 to 7,000 years ago?
Right. So there's a neat story. One of the most prominent brewery has been Dogfish Head, a Delaware brewery. A number of years ago, they had a gathering at the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology to host a dinner which was meant to recreate food, what people were eating and drinking at a funeral feast. And so they were, and so as kind of an experiment, they scraped these ancient bronze vessels. Archaeologists had, and then he put that under the scope, you know, using various methods, and recreated this beer, which is Midas Touch, although now they have a whole line of them, that looked at, that essentially recreated what was being drank, you know, thousands of years ago. I think the oldest one, as you said, was 9,000 years old. It was called Chateau Jiahu, and it was a Chinese beer made from rice, honey, and fruit.
And tying it all together, Todd, with the genetic research, are we able to know, hey, the yeast they used is the great, 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 et cetera, grandparent of yeast we might be using now in beer?
You know, it's a great question, and I may not be the right person to answer that one. You know, but as you say, there's a whole continuum, and I guess we look out into the future, it's pretty exciting what we can look forward to.
Have you been able to try any of these recreations of ancient brews yourself?
Yeah, I have. Well, they're all commercially available. So I'm actually a big fan of Midas Touch.
And so describe the flavor. Talk us through what that tastes like. So this is rediscovered by scraping a bronze vessel, maybe associated with the famous King Midas. The bronze didn't turn to gold. What does the beer he drank, the brew he drank, taste like?
There's grape must in it. There's a kind of sweetness. It's discernible as beer for sure. But it has a kind of softness, a sweetness that has its own characteristics. I wouldn't describe it in terms of its malt and hops the same way as some other beers.
All right, Todd, thanks a lot for joining us. Fascinating stuff.
Thank you.
That was Todd Pittock, a writer whose work has appeared in The Atlantic, National Geographic, Traveler, and other national publications. We've been talking about the newest cutting-edge science behind craft beer production. You can find his piece, Brewing Better Beer with Genetics, at discovermagazine.com.